Hello and welcome to This Week in Wealth. I'm Alex Steger. For listeners tuning in, hoping to hear more from Peter Malouk, bad news, I'm afraid, Peter is not with us. Good news, though, Ian Wenick, as ever, is. Ian, fantastic.
Thank you for having me on, as usual. This is the second podcast I've taped today from this studio.
I was going to say, right, you're sort of a, you're becoming, I don't know, who was that a podcast, rent a podcast? Oh, that's terrible. But you know what I mean. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing earlier.
Yeah, I was speaking with Michael Botnick. You might have know him from Ritholtz Wealth Management. He had me on his podcast, which tapes live. So, you know, there's no safety net unlike what we have.
And then, yeah, although we do tend to keep most of our mistakes in, which is, you know, a little embarrassing.
And sometimes. Then I have another two podcast guest appearances lined up in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, well, plug them now. Why not?
Yeah, I'll be speaking with Peter Lazaroff from Plan Corp, and I'll be speaking with the guys from MileMarker, Kyle Van Pelt, in a couple of weeks.
And what were you talking to Michael about this morning?
Michael and I, yeah, well, he called me the most feared and respected reporter in the RIA industry.
It's nice to be both. You know, I'll take one.
This is the first time anyone's ever used either of those words to describe me.
That's unfair. I'm sure your team. I don't know. How did it go? What were we talking about?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, he kind of, you know, I kind of call these kinds of appearances like a demystifying the media, where I explain a little bit about how I got to where I am today, how the reporting process works, crazy stories we've broken, asking my opinion on the state of the RIA industry, which, look, I don't think my opinion's worth much of anything, but
well, hang on, people are tuning in for it now, so I think we have to at least.
No, they're tuning in for you. That's why my mom tunes in.
Oh, really? Does she?
Yes.
I didn't know your mom tuned in. I knew your wife tuned in.
Yes, my mom is a regular listener. She keeps asking when I'm going to mention her.
Even more pressure. Well, now, you've achieved that at least. Good. Okay. Well, look, let's crack on with the rest of the pod. And while Peter Malouk isn't here, thematically, this episode is probably not miles away from what we discussed last week. A lot of what we discussed last week with Peter, which was around kind of deal making in the RIA space and sort of how that's done, who some of the players are, and sort of why people get to maybe the multiples they do. With that in mind, it's similar but different. I suppose with Peter, we probably focused a little bit more on the sort of the larger end of the RIA scale and the larger end of the RIA investor, namely sort of big PE shops and what they were up to. But today we're going to talk a little bit about another kind of RIA investor, something we're calling the minority investor. Before we get to that, though, Ian, the sort of hook for this, as it were, the news story that's given us reason to talk about this was something that you broke on Wednesday. So do you want to talk to us a little bit about that? And then we'll use that as a diving off point to talk about this broader trend.
Yeah. So Dan Newhall, who was a former managing partner at Rise Growth Partners, which is another RIA minority investor, we broke that he is looking to raise money for his own personal RIA minority investing business that will take stakes in firms with between $1 billion and $3 billion in assets under management. And just for some context, Dan Newhall, he left Rise Growth Partners in 2024 to found his own sell-side M&A advisory business called Low Willow Advisors. So he's been flying solo now for about a year.
But originally it was a sort of advisory shop to kind of help firms who were selling. But now he's making that move into actually investing in maybe not some of those firms, but firms in general.
Exactly,
themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's, on the one hand, you can say, okay, so it's just another guy trying to get a slice of some RIAs. But on the other, you could say, well, look, this is part of a wider trend. So you mentioned that he was previously at Rise, which is Joe Duran's vehicle for also taking stakes in RIAs and, you know, helping to grow them and I guess ultimately at some point sell those stakes. And there are lots of others. We'll come on to them. But maybe broadly, let's talk a little bit about what, when we say a minority investor, what do we mean by that? And how is it different from, say, sort of conventional PE and a strategic acquirer or strategics, as they're known?
Yeah, so the way that I define minority investors, and this might be like a Supreme Court, you know it when you see it, I define a minority investor as a firm whose investment thesis specifically, we are going to take minority stakes in RIAs. And then that and can change. There are certain firms like Joe Duran and Rise Growth Partners where it's, we'll take minority stakes and We'll help you maximize your business efficiency. We'll help you grow organically. There's we'll invest in your business and we'll help you fund and source M&A, which is what Wealth Partners Capital Group does, which is what Emigrant Partners does and what Constellation Wealth Capital does. And then there's also the group of we'll invest in your business and we'll stay passive and not do anything. So you just get the business valuation, which is similar to like what a Kudu does.
Okay. All right. So we've name checked quite a few of them there. We'll come on to maybe what's new about this, because some of those firms that you mentioned, they have been around for a while. But before we do that, let's just distinguish them between the will invest in a minority stake and model that you've just described. And again, so that's different to sort of traditional private equity, which again might still take a minority stake, but has a different approach.
Yeah. So I think it's worth knowing that these are firms that have raised funds or funds from private equity investors specifically for RIA investing. Whereas with a private equity firm, if they're taking a stake in RIA, even if it's minority, it might be through a flagship fund or a more general financial services fund. But these firms, like a good example is Constellation Wealth Capital, Carl Heikenberg, they raised $1 billion specifically for an RIA-only focused investment fund.
And do they have a different time? I guess obviously it will depend from investor to investor, but do they have a different time horizon again to kind of conventional private equity, which, you know, might be a sort of somewhere between 4 and 7, 8 years, and you know they're going to get in and get out, and I suppose also a different, or do they have a different approach to strategics who to some degree could be sort of patient, maybe even permanent capital? Are the horizons in between, or is it all just depending on the firm?
I mean, you know, I think a good example would be, let's take a look at Emigrant Partners, which is part of billionaire Howard Milstein's New York Private Bank and Trust. So Emigrant has had some firms that, like an Evensky, Folds and Katz, it might be Evensky, Katz and Folds, that they've invested in since 2007, 2008, 2009. We're going on a near 20-year hold period, back when the company was still known as Fiduciary Network. There have also been firms that Emigrant has invested in and already exited through a sale to a private equity firm. Good example, they had a couple that they exited, I believe Parallel Advisors, and I think it was Audis Asset Management, both in the San Francisco area. They exited those through a sale to Golden Gate Capital, the private equity firm. There are some where they are co-investors as well with other private equity sponsors. Good example of that would be Pure Financial Advisors in San Diego, in which they're a minority investor alongside Lee, which is a private equity firm.
One thing I wanted to ask about was sort of what these investors' intentions are with the RIAs that they acquire. So you mentioned someone like Emigrant that's been doing this for a long time and has stakes in multiple firms, but they don't seem to have any interest in combining those firms or driving sort of synergies between those firms and things. They're very much independent positions. And that's obviously a very different model to, you know, some that we've seen who are, you know, okay, like a Focus or something who, you know, obviously bought lots of firms together, perhaps didn't integrate them all immediately, but is doing that now. This minority investor sort of trend or those players aren't doing that. They're not looking to bring firms together. They're not looking to create an integrated business. They're going to be standalone businesses.
Yeah. And there are some firms that have kind of deviated from that a little bit. So for example, Joe Duran and Rise Growth, they are trying to have sort of economies of scale, efficiencies when it comes to back end and middle office services. You see the same thing with Dynasty Financial Partners, which historically has been a pure middle and back office platform. Well, they've started taking minority stakes in some of their affiliated businesses. But to your point, there are some where, yeah, their whole thesis and their whole pitch and part of why they're so attractive is to be able to say, yeah, we will invest in you and you're not going to change how you operate your business. You can keep running. We're just here to support you in X, Y, and Z ways. So it's time for my tortured analogy of the episode.
We should have a little like jingle for it or something.
Yeah, we should.
Producer.
Alan, come on, get on this. So have you ever been wake surfing?
Have I ever been what now?
Wake surfing.
Wake surfing. I have not been wake surfing.
Okay, so wake surfing is when you generate an artificial wave off the back of a boat, and your job is to surf behind it. So when
you're like water skiing?
It's similar to water skiing.
But like with a surfboard.
Yes, but with a surfboard.
Okay, all right.
But the way you get started, when you first kind of – you pull yourself up using a tether cord that's attached to the back of the boat. Then eventually you free yourself. I view taking some of these minority deals for some of these sellers, it's a way where they feel like they still have the control, the support, because they still have majority equity ownership of the business. They have that tether that's clinging to the old model. And then the firms that choose to sell a majority stake or integrate fully, you know, they've let go of the tether. So that's the analogy I'll make.
Okay. I think you might have landed it. It's about as hard as doing the tetherboarding itself, it sounds. So what does this mean for where firms have done that, I suppose, and they sort of do nothing? Is it a case that these minority investors coming in are effectively helping with succession planning or helping them release some equity from the business without kind of stepping back fully?
And what helps is that it also helps validate the valuation too. And that can play a role when you're talking about internal equity sales to employees or getting retiring partners out of the business. You have a baseline metric there.
Okay, so let's pivot a little bit to what's new here. So you mentioned firms like Emigrant, who, you know, have been doing this for a long time. Obviously, the guy you wrote about today, that's new. Rise, Joe Duran, relatively new. Obviously, Joe has been around and been buying RIAs or investing in RIAs for a long time, but doing it this way is different for him, and that particular venture is new. And our sort of thesis going into this was that this idea of the rise of the minority investor, there are more of these firms than there were before. I guess Constellation is young-ish on the grand scheme of things. How many more are there, and what's driving that?
Yeah, I mean, I know of at least three other individuals that are actively trying to raise money for similar minority investing strategies to what like a Dan Newhall is doing.
Yeah.
I think another factor that underlies this is that in general, the check size that you have to write as a minority investor is going to be smaller. So that, I think, not that my opinion is worth anything, that leads to a lower barrier to entry. And I think if you're a GP, or an LP who wants to have exposure to this space, but you're not willing to commit the billions or hundreds of millions of capital it takes to buy a controlling stake in a single kind of flagship firm, you can diversify yourself across a bunch of other different RIA holders by taking smaller pieces. And you can still have the benefit of the multiple arbitrage that's driven all of this when you exit yourself.
And I suppose, is there a case that there are more and more people now with this expertise? So you go back 10 years, you know, it was a relatively small group of people who were working on RIA, M&A, but as the firms that have done that have become bigger and more sophisticated and people have risen up the ranks, you've got a lot of people who've kind of worked in and around this space who think, actually, hang on a second, I could probably do this myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then again, that's actually another one of these big trends that defines this industry, which is the maturation and professionalization of this business. This is part of that. It really is.
That's really interesting. And so what does this mean, I suppose, for the wider market? Does this mean that you can, again, kind of alluding to what Peter spoke about last week, there was a time perhaps when sort of being 1 billion or less wasn't really big enough to get a good deal. And obviously that's changing as everything big has probably been bought, and yet there's still tons of money looking to get into this space. This would seem kind of perfect for some of those smaller firms. Is that who's going to be doing the deals? This is very good news if you're a smaller RIA, because there are more buyers than ever for you, because there's this sort of almost this sort of third tier of advice of investor now.
Yeah. I mean, you've opened the door now for a Simpsons analogy. I don't think you realize.
This is like the full Wenick bingo card. We've had the labored simile. Have we talked about baseball yet?
No, that'll be for the end.
We'll get to that at the end. Okay, so Simpsons reference.
Yes.
Let's go.
But in the Simpsons episode where Bart does ballet for PE class, it's because he showed up late, and the other option at the end, it was just ballet or tethered swimming. All the other spots had been taken. And to your point, I mean, the number of firms that haven't had any institutional investment whatsoever that are high growth firms, the number of established firms is pretty small. There are very few options out there. But if you can get in on the ground floor at one of these firms that's $1 billion to $2 billion to $3 billion, $4 billion, and you can supercharge that into a platform yourself, well, why not? Why buy a mega platform when you can build it yourself at a lower barrier to entry?
Yeah, and again, for those advisors, this is good because there's another option for them too.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And it lets them monetize the business, validate the valuation without taking all the chips off the table.
Very interesting. So you tease this a little bit, but you know of some more that are probably coming down the line. In fact, I know of them because you've told me them. But we're not just going to give away a string of scoops on the podcast. That would be funny if we did that. If, like, increasingly for those listeners who stayed right till the end, we just dropped a story that we're going to write.
Well, like a Marvel post-credit scene?
Kind of, yeah. But like the whole movie again at the end. Exciting, yeah. If you want to hear those stories or read those stories, indeed, listener, you're going to have to just keep it on citywire.com/RAA. Excellent. Do we have any more to say about the rise of the minority investor?
No, I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
Excellent. Okay, well, look, you teased the idea that we might talk about baseball. You've been staying up late the last two nights to watch your beloved Padres destroy the Mets. I say my beloved Mets, the team in which I take a passing interest.
The team, you have a hat. Don't you have a hat?
It's my son's hat. I gave it to my son. It was too small for me. But yes, I have a hat. Yeah, I have earned a hat.
That counts as one of your teams. I still think the Rays count as a team for you too because of Michelle.
The Rays. Yeah, I did. Well, the Rays are homeless. The Rays play in the Yankees sort of training ground
right
now?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But it's in Tampa.
It is in Tampa, yeah. Excellent. All right, well, look, let's leave it there, Ian. A fantastic run-through of the advent, rise, acceleration of the minority investor. Listener, thank you very much indeed for being with us, and we'll be back again next week.